From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. It is the case that has sickened the nation, a trusted doctor on four Olympic Games, with American gymnasts and with athletes at Michigan State. Larry Nassar was sentenced yesterday to up to 175 years in prison. His accusers spoke powerfully in court, story after story, standing up to the man who molested them. Now they want to know why women and men in their sports associations, their university, enabled him. This hour on Point, the sad, sick story of Dr. Larry Nassar. You can join us on air or online. What do you make of these young women telling their stories, standing up and facing their abuser? Join us at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first this hour from Ann Arbor, Michigan, is Kate Wells, reporter with Michigan Radio. She's been covering the trial of Larry Nassar and was, of course, in the courtroom yesterday. Kate, great to have you with us.
Thanks, Jane.
I should say to our listeners, we're discussing sexual abuse this hour, and the language we might use might be difficult for some people to hear. Kate, this was an extraordinary seven-day hearing, about 160 young women speaking out in court about Dr. Larry Nassar and his abuse. Describe this week in that courtroom.
I mean, it was really unprecedented. We've never seen a case like this. We started out at the beginning of the week thinking it was going to be huge with just about 88 women and girls that we were expecting to hear from. And every single day we'd come back into that courtroom and the prosecutor's office would tell us, guys, we've got more. More have kept coming forward. That happened every single day. These were women and girls who flew in from places like California, who had not been intending to go public, certainly not to walk in front of a sea of cameras and give their names and tell their stories this publicly. But as they were watching these other women in those first few days, they said, I have to do this. This is the time.
Judge Rosemary Aquilina opened her courtroom to these young women who wanted to address Dr. Nassar directly. Here she is, Judge Rosemary Aquilina, sentencing Larry Nassar yesterday to up to 175 years in prison, making clear that she relished this moment.
It is my privilege on counts 1, 2, 5, 8, 10, and 18, and 24 to sentence you to 40 years. I just signed your death warrant.
At one point, Kate Wells, Nassar complained that it was too hard to listen to the victim's stories, and the judge essentially said, too bad. Here is the judge reading a portion of a letter from Larry Nassar, which elicited gasps from the courtroom.
What I did in the state cases was medical, not sexual. The media convinced them that everything I did was wrong and bad. They feel I broke their trust. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned.
Oh. Kate Wells, the judge extended the period of time for victims' statements here because women came forward who were unscheduled. Is that right?
Yeah, this started off, we thought this was going to be 4 days. It became 7 days. And that moment right there at the end really encapsulated what this judge was trying to do with this hearing. She gave every woman, every parent, every husband who wanted to speak as much time as they needed. And they were really, for the first time, facing this man who had abused them as children. And the thing about this case, Jane, is that it spans decades, right? I mean, we have women who reported this in the 90s when they were teenagers, up through women, girls, really, who are still minors, you know, still wearing braces, who were assaulted as early as more recently as 2016. And that moment that you just heard there when she's reading Larry Nassar's letter that he had written to the court complaining about how this was being handled, that came during her sentencing immediately after Nassar had issued his first ever direct apology at the end of hearing 7 days, 150 plus women. And when Nassar is apologizing to them, you know, you hear sobs start in the courtroom. And then Judge Aquilina tells him, I have do not believe you in the slightest, because let me read from this 6-page letter you sent me, in which it's exactly like you heard. He said this was totally medical. I did nothing wrong. He even said, I took this plea deal only because I wanted to save my family and my community the difficulty of a long trial. But boy, they're really doing me wrong. And yes, that wording, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. Yeah. You can't make this up.
Yeah. Well, those voices by those women, they were powerful. I want to play a couple of them. Here's former gymnast Alexis Moore during her impact statement, asking how Nassar could abuse her with her parents standing right there in the room.
Why me? Why was I the 9-year-old? I've looked into my parents' hardened eyes, seeing their pain from now knowing that their only child was molested right in front of them in the same room.
And here's a previous dancer at Michigan State, Jessica Smith, who was assaulted by Larry Nassar for months when she was 17 years old. She came to Nassar with a sprained ankle and was told that if he put pressure on a point in her vagina, his words, it would release tension on the wounded area. Smith now runs the hashtag MeTooMSU movement. Michigan State says that the university has something to hide.
I will not be healed until MSU does the right thing, because one man might be behind bars, but for all of the people that enabled that, that could still happen again. They're showing very clearly what their priorities are, and that's money and status and sports.
So last night, Michigan State University President Luana Simon resigned. Larry Nassar worked at MSU for many years. Tell us about that.
So here's the thing about this case. This case and what we have known about this has been going on for a year and a half. And it took the heat that you saw on places like MSU and USAG. That heat really built this week. These women, 150 plus of them, had to literally come out in front of the world and tell stories just like you heard from Alexis, these incredibly difficult, heartbreaking stories, for the pressure on these places to really rise. We heard from women who said, you know, I have been reporting this to my coach, my trainers at MSU as far back as 1997. We know that the university did a full Title IX investigation in 2014 into Nassar. They cleared him. They told the woman who complained that she had misunderstood a legitimate medical procedure. They put him back to work, even as MSU police were still doing a criminal investigation into Nassar for more than a year. So we heard and saw from little girls in that courtroom who say, if you had just gotten rid of him when you were doing that criminal investigation in 2014, I never had to be abused. This could have been stopped.
And remind us, Kate Wells, among those who were abused by Nassar are Olympic gold medalists Allie Reisman, Gabby Douglas, Simone Biles.
Yeah, they've been – Allie came out to the court this week. They've been putting themselves out there just like these women, but obviously they have more name recognition. It gets headlines even when this case wasn't getting headlines for the other women. And you watch these girls who are sitting next to this hero of theirs, you know, because so many of these girls are gymnasts. They have been watching people like Allie Reisman their whole lives. And I watched them go up and introduce themselves to Allie, and you could just tell that this made them feel so validated. But also, what a surreal, weird way to meet the people that you have been looking up to for so long when you're both sexual assault victims of the same man.
Kate Wells is a reporter with Michigan Radio. Such great work you've done there. Thank you very much for your time, Kate.
Thanks, Jane.
Joining me now from Los Angeles, and we're so pleased to have her, is Jeanette Antolin. She's a member of the U.S. Gymnastics, National Gymnastics Team, was from 95 to 2000 at the Pan American Games in 1999. She helped the U.S. win a team silver medal. She was also one of Larry Nassar's victims and faced Nassar in the Lansing courtroom a week ago. Jeanette, we're so glad to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Jane.
Tell us what it was like for you in court.
Well, it was very overwhelming stepping into the courtroom and seeing him and, you know, starting to hear the other victims' stories. But it was also empowering, you know, standing there with women that had been through something so similar. For so long, I felt like, you know, I was kind of by myself. So to be able to talk to those women and become what Judge Aquilina calls a sister survivors, it just brought a lot of strength and also healing as well.
You were treated by Dr. Nasser for years. I'm curious, how did he get to be this superstar doctor that so many people, so many athletes, so many parents trusted?
I think he was groomed to be this person. Not only did he do grooming, but I think also the people around him that chose him to be in this position, they chose him for a reason as well. I feel like they chose him because he wasn't going to say anything about the abuse that they were doing to gymnasts, you know, as far as verbally and, you know, physically in the gym. So it's like, if you won't tell, I won't tell, you know, and he was the perfect person for that because he had his own secrets that he didn't want out there.
160 women speaking in court during these victim statements to Larry Nasser, to his face. I'm curious, Jeanette, what was it like for all of you behind the scenes? How did you support each other in court and beyond and help each other really move forward from this?
Well, I think just, you know, telling each other stories, just getting to know each other because we've seen each other's names in the media. A bunch of us last year went to Senator Feinstein to try to get a bill on the floor to be passed to help protect amateur athletes. So we've been kind of getting to know each other, but actually meeting face to face was really great to just be able to talk and get to know each other and just know that we're there for each other. And as crazy as it seems, you know, it's like now we have this bond for life, and it's like, you know, I know no matter what that most of us will stay in touch and, you know, just throughout this healing process and throughout our lives.
Hey, it's Ophira Eisenberg, host of Ask Me Another. We headed out to L.A. for two all-celebrity contestant shows, and the competition was more intense than the traffic on the 405. Linda Cardellini, Jeff Garland, Lance Reddick, and Paul Rust. Only one took home an Ask Me Another Rubik's Cube. Find Ask Me Another on the NPR One app and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about the many, many young female athletes who were harmed by a sexual predator and how they finally defended themselves after years of being ignored, even warned to keep quiet. You can join the conversation. Parents, does this story scare you? Does it empower you to prepare your child athlete? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We're speaking right now with former gymnast and member of the U.S. National Gymnastics Team, Jeanette Antolin, about her experience with disgraced, convicted team Dr. Larry Nasser. And a reminder, listeners, we're discussing sexual abuse this hour, and the language we might use might be difficult for some people to hear. Jeanette, I wanted to play this sound, a couple pieces here. This is from the sentencing hearing yesterday. Assistant Attorney General Angelo Pavlidis said Nasser got away with molesting girls for three decades, despite all the warnings, and that he was only stopped because former gymnast Rachel Denhollander made stopping Nasser her mission.
Let that sink in for a minute. Right now, he would be at his office on Hagedorn and Hannah, not far from this courtroom in the Michigan State University campus, abusing children, had it not been for the investigative reporters and Rachel, who brought this case. We know federal law enforcement did not stop him, nor did trainers or coaches or deans or medical supervisors. Victim disclosures to adults didn't stop him.
And here's the mother of deceased gymnast Chelsea Markham testifying in court. She believes that Chelsea, her daughter, took her own life because of Larry Nasser.
She started bawling, and I said, "Chelsea, tell me what's wrong." And she said, "Mom, he put his fingers in me, and they weren't gloved." And I said, "Chelsea, I was right there in the room." And she goes, "You couldn't see what was going on, Mom." And she said, "He hurt me." She took her own life because she couldn't deal with the pain anymore.
Jeanette Antolin, what stood out to me as I listened to every single one of those young women read their statements about Dr. Nasser's abuse is the role of parents who sent their children to this man. Many of these parents talked about how Dr. Nasser positioned himself so that they could not see what he was doing. He raised the table. He used a towel as cover. so the parents couldn't see, but they were right there. Talk about that a little bit from your own experience.
Well, my parents weren't in the room. I was actually abused by him when I was away from my parents on the road at the Corrales Ranch in international and national competitions. But from speaking with the other survivors, yes, he's a very smart man. He definitely was. But he also was manipulating the parents when he was doing the procedures and talking to them about everyday stuff, so it seemed completely normal. So this man was very good at what he was doing. So for parents to feel, you know, comfortable in the room, of course they're not going to think that this man is abusing their child, because if they had even the slightest inkling, I mean, this would have been taken care of a long time ago. But he really was a master of what he was doing.
What about the governing body of gymnastics, USA Gymnastics? Three USA Gymnastics board members have resigned. Gymnast Allie Reisman has said that USA Gymnastics is in need of dramatic reform. They've cut ties with the Corrales Ranch, this center in Texas where many of the victims were abused. I mean, what responsibility does the governing body, USA Gymnastics, hold in all this?
They hold a huge responsibility, because it was on their watch that this man was able to do all these things. And it's because that they didn't follow policies and procedures that he was allowed to be in our rooms by himself, you know, and we got treatment in his hotel room when we were on the road and nobody else was there. Nobody was looking out for our best interests. They were just concerned about when we were on the road to win medals and make them money. So, of course, they do have responsibilities. They were reported to multiple times, and clearly they did nothing about it. So they hold huge responsibility in why this man was able to continue to do what he was doing.
What would you say to little girls, Jeanette Antolin, young women who have stories, maybe not exactly like yours, but similar, who are afraid to come forward to speak up about sexual abuse? What would you say to them after what you've been through with Larry Nassar?
I would just like to let them know that they are stronger than they think, that their voice does matter, because I know for me, for so long, you know, before I was able to come forward, it was a couple months, I really was so scared that people weren't going to believe me, that they were going to thrash me. But I feel like now, with the momentum that we have going with not just our case, but in with the Me Too movement and, you know, Time's Up, I really feel like people are listening and they will believe, instead of their first thought to be, no, this can't be true. You know, I want them to know that their voice does matter and that can make a difference. I mean, coming forward, I didn't know if my voice would make a difference, but I knew I had to try, because me stepping forward would save those other little girls, and it truly has. This man has been put behind bars because all of us women have stood up and fought for what was right.
Well, Jeanette Antolin, I know you are a hero to a lot of young people, and certainly a very courageous person. I really appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you so much, Jane.
Thank you so much. Jeanette Antolin is a former gymnast, member of the U.S. National Gymnastics Team. I'd like to bring now two other voices into this conversation. Joining me in the studio is Lee Gilmore, professor of women's and gender studies at Wellesley College and author of Tainted Witness, Why We Doubt What Women Say About Their Lives. Lee, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Jane.
And Katie Strang joins me from Grand Rapids, Michigan. She's managing editor and senior writer at the Athletic, former senior editor and writer at ESPN. She was in the courtroom yesterday. She's been doing some very thoughtful writing on this story. And you can read those stories by going to our website, onpointradio.org. Katie, great to have you.
Thank you for having me on, Jane.
What was it like for you in the courtroom yesterday?
It was difficult, honestly, you know, not just as a professional, but, you know, I'm an MSU alum. I was a competitive gymnast growing up, and I'm a mother. So this entire week has been, you know, an emotional, difficult, trying time, but one that I'm very humbled and honored to have, you know, been able to bear witness to these women whose, you know, truly their bravery and their courage and their poise has been a remarkable thing to witness, a very powerful sort of phenomenon, you know, to experience firsthand. So I'm tremendously grateful that I got to cover this assignment, and that, you know, people are telling their stories.
It is a phenomenon. I think that's an interesting and correct way to phrase it. Let me play this sound before his sentencing yesterday. Former USA Gymnastics Dr. Larry Nassar apologized to more than 150 women who publicly confronted him in the courtroom.
There are no words that can describe the depth and breadth of how sorry I am for what has occurred.
And then this from Rachel Denhollander. She's the woman who really started the process of putting Larry Nassar behind bars and far away from children. She was a gymnast abused by him. She's now a lawyer, a mother of three. Here she was during her impact statement, taking stock of the moment and asking the toughest questions of the society and the institutions that enable people like Larry Nassar.
This is what it looks like when institutions create a culture where a predator can flourish unafraid and unabated. And this is what it looks like when people in authority refuse to listen, put friendships in front of the truth, fail to create or enforce proper policy, and fail to hold enablers accountable. This is what it looks like. It looks like a courtroom full of survivors who carry deep wounds. Women and girls who have banded together to fight for themselves because no one else would do it.
Lee Gilmore, what about this culture, as Rachel says there, that puts friendships in front of truth, whether it's at USA Gymnastics or Michigan State or anywhere, a culture where children are afraid to say no to adults, complaints are not taken seriously, and abuse happens?
Well, this is really a microcosm of a larger phenomenon that we're confronting and that's being exposed by the Me Too movement and the Time's Up movement, which is that we have a pervasive culture of doubt when it comes to what women say about their lives, especially when they bring forward accounts of harm. And on the other side of that, we doubt what women say because we believe what men say. So there is a routine attribution of credibility and authority that are that is given to men in power, and that disadvantages systematically any woman who challenges it. So this exceeds any individual case, that this is the kind of the condition into which individual testimony is dropped. And so when you hear the kind of testimony that we've heard for 7 days, this is really a kind of clear expression of everything that we now are looking at and learning more and more about.
I've got to get some callers in here. Many want to join. Here's Claire in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Claire. Welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Jane, very much. I hope the world will learn a lesson from this horrible, horrible thing. We have to believe the women, the children, when they tell, when they finally are brave enough to tell what happened. We have to believe them, and we can't blame them. We have to put the blame on the perpetrators and the enablers, not the victims.
You're right, Claire. Thanks for stating it. Jean in Stowe, Massachusetts, you're on the air. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I'm calling because I'm a little worried with this, the large sentence and the focus on this one perpetrator, that we're going to lose the forest for the trees here, which is I feel like there's something intrinsic to the way girls slash women's gymnastics is run, where you have these very abusive, at least psychologically, if not physically, coaches that are elevated, and that people just keep feeding them more girls to become stars. And it enables somebody like Nassar to exist. I mean, I live in a small town of less than 7,000 people. A couple of decades ago, we had a scandal in our own little town gym that involved sexual abuse and a coach. This is not unusual. This happens all the time. There's something particular in women's gymnastics that I would never let my daughter go into it because of the way they treat girls, and they treat them as bodies where they can just do things. And the girls are not meant to trust themselves. They're meant to trust their coach above everything else.
Let me pick it up from there, Jean. It's a great point. Katie Strang, jump back in here. To Jean's point, I mean, Larry Nassar's abuse did not occur in a vacuum. I mean, talk about sort of the systemic structural failures in these organizations and in the people that are allowed, you know, to let this go on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, throughout this week, a prevailing theme was the culpability of people around Larry Nassar. One name that came up frequently, John Gettert of Twist Stars Gymnastics. He has since been suspended by USA Gymnastics, but several of these women detailed horrific accounts of emotional, physical, mental abuse. One woman said that he told her to kill herself several times. She detailed weekly weigh-ins in which if the gymnast exceeded the weight threshold, they'd be made to scrub the floors with toothbrushes. Mm. Just a tremendous insight into the toxic culture of gymnastics that I think really allowed Larry Nassar to thrive and to get away with what he was doing largely undetected.
Lee Gilmore, in December of 2016, USA Gymnastics paid Michaela Maroney $1.25 million, had her sign a settlement agreement agreeing not to talk about years of abuse by USA Gymnastics team doctor Larry Nassar. She's now trying to overturn that settlement case. But talk about the secrecy. And again, this idea that we're trying to cover up, we're trying not to be transparent about these serious problems.
I think, you know, all of this is really throwing a light on how women's testimony is being managed to the sidelines, how it's kept in the shadows. It's not, it doesn't happen innocently and it doesn't happen on its own. People within organizations need to take active steps to silence survivors. And these are the steps that have been taken. They're managed into non-disclosure agreements. They are threatened. They are demeaned. They're diminished. And these are the tactics. They are enabled within specific cultures, and they are perpetrated by individuals. So it is a systemic situation, but it doesn't arise on its own. People actively have to do things to silence women and to abuse them.
Here's gold medalist Allie Reisman in court last week condemning USA Gymnastics and the USA Olympic Committee for making hollow promises to protect their athletes.
It's easy to put out statements talking about how athlete care is the highest priority, but they've been saying that for years, and all the while this nightmare was happening. False assurances from organizations are dangerous, especially when people want so badly to believe them. They make it easier to look away from the problem and enable bad things to continue to happen.
Katie Strang, NCAA has opened its own investigation into Michigan State's handling of this case and historically its handling of Larry Nassar. What other investigations are ongoing? This is a multi-pronged process, I suspect.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things that came out of the MSU's Board of Trustees meeting last Friday was that they did prompt an independent investigation from the state's attorney general's office. Likely that would have been undertaken anyway. But, you know, what this does is it provides an independent investigation, which MSU did conduct its own internal investigation, the findings of which they decided not to make public, which to me is very puzzling for a public university to not have a level of transparency and accountability. And that is what the AG's office will bring. They have the capacity to bring political pressure. They have the capacity and the resources to bring criminal charges if necessary. It's important to point out that if you look at the Penn State case, which many people compare this to, although there are many differences, three administration officials did serve time for their actions or inactions in the Jerry Sandusky sex abuse trial. So I think what we're going to see is a reckoning, not just for Larry Nassar, but for the institutions that looked the other way and failed these women.
You agree with that?
I do. And I'm looking at two sides of this as a scholar who studies women's testimony and cultural practices of judgment. One is how women are made vulnerable. And that's what everyone is casting a light on by talking about systemic abuses and the need for accountability. The other part of it is how survivor testimony changes our culture. Mm-hmm. That when the judge says, leave your pain here, that is an insight into the public power of women's testimony and the significant role that empathy plays in it.
Ever get to Friday, look back on the week, and say to yourself, what just happened? I'm Sam Sanders. Check out my podcast, It's Been a Minute, where every Friday we catch up on the news and the culture of the week and try to make sense of it all. Listen on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about Larry Nassar, a trusted doctor who is now sentenced to up to 175 years in prison. And you can join the conversation. What's the future of U.S. gymnastics? What is the lesson in all of this? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guest this hour, Lee Gilmore, professor of women's and gender studies at Wellesley College, and Katie Strang, managing editor and a senior writer at The Athletic. I want to stress again to our listeners that we're talking about sexual abuse this hour, and the language that we use might be difficult for some people to hear. This is an interview on NBC's Today Show this morning where two-time Olympian Allie Reisman described what it was like for her to confront Larry Nassar in the courtroom last week.
I just spoke, and I felt like I really had to be strong. I feel a responsibility. But after, I will be honest, I was sick. I almost passed out. I had the worst headache for hours. And I mean, even since then, I still don't feel good now. It's hard to put into words, but it makes me literally sick, all the stress and the trauma of everything. But for that moment, I had to be strong. And I'm very, very exhausted from it.
Let me get a caller in here. Lynn in Nashville, Tennessee. Thank you for waiting, Lynn, and welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. I was abused by my pediatrician when I was 11 years old. I'm 64 years old today. And I so appreciate what these young women are doing because they've given somebody like me a voice. There are four people who know about this, who know what happened to me. And what my question is, I do have a question of your experts, is why is the public incredulous about women coming out, speaking out later? They insist that you must do it at the time the incident occurs, or otherwise you're not believed. And I've got to say that after the Senate campaign in Alabama, it really brought my experience back afresh. And I am so appreciative and grateful to these girls and women.
We're appreciative to you, Lynn, for calling. We really are. Thank you very much. I'll ask your question to our experts here. I want to play this sound first from Assistant Attorney General Angela Povilaitis at the sentencing hearing yesterday. She expressed shock that after all this testimony, some in the public still don't believe these girls.
It was brought to my attention by many involved in this case that there are still people in this very community and elsewhere, I imagine, who are saying that these women were all in it for the money or the attention. Are you kidding me? After 150 heart-wrenching, raw, graphic, visceral impact statements, how can anyone still believe that?
Lee Gilmore, what about this? I mean, to Lynn, the caller's point about, you know, being incredulous about, you know, not speaking up for years. Or in this case, as we hear the Assistant Attorney General talking about, still not believing these girls at all.
Well, Lynn asks why, and it's an important question. She deserves an answer. Why we still don't believe women and girls in the face of all this testimony, is it because some prefer the preservation of the status quo? And the status quo is what protected Larry Nassar and what permits cultures of abuse to continue. And the status quo is a catastrophe for women.
How do you feel about that, Katie Strang? How would you add? What would you add?
Oh, I'd add a few different things. You know, one thing the Assistant Attorney General pointed out in her closing remarks was not only is delayed disclosure, you know, very, very common, that it's very much the experience of many women to bury and suppress these feelings and this trauma. And so that, you know, there is no statute of limitations on these women's pain and suffering, and we should keep that in mind. You know, to sort of piggyback off of what Lee just said, I think people are incredulous and don't don't believe because they don't want to believe. I think it's more difficult for people to reconcile with the fact that these monsters, these serial child molesters, they are among us. They are among our children. They are teaching our children. They are coaching our children. They are ingratiating themselves to us parents and us community members. I think that's a really difficult thing for people to wrap their head around, and that does not excuse inaction or looking the other way or not doing the right thing even when it's hard. But I think it shows you, you know, why there is this pervasive culture of doubt around people when they talk about abuse.
Lynn, thank you for that call. Let's go to Sebastian in Montgomery, Vermont. Hi, Sebastian. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thank you. I too, am obviously a male, and I was abused as a child until about the age of 16. And my situation I've dealt with, and I've worked through that. My question is what type of psychological help, evaluation, and treatments will this person and any and everyone else who eventually becomes convicted of these criminal acts against women, men, children in general? Because I feel like that will be one of the things that helps us understand the spectrum of this. Mm-hmm. If there's a doctor who is molesting children basically in front of their parents, there's a psychological thing going on with him, you know, sort of like a titillating thing. So that's one question. The other question is, if all of these things begin to pile up as legal precedents, will that help us so that someone like the situation in Alabama, when someone decides to put their head above the parapet and rise above us for political office, that when there's allegations lodged, red flags will more than go up, but they'll become activated?
Thank you very much, Sebastian. Katie Strang, what do you say?
I don't know if I'm equipped to to answer both of those questions, to be honest. And I don't know if we'll ever truly know, you know, the authenticity of Larry Nassar's claims. You know, we saw two sides of him yesterday in court. We saw someone for a rare moment showed a shred of humanity in apologizing directly to his victims, to his survivors, and showing a level of remorse. And as Kate referenced earlier in the program, moments later, Judge Aquilina shared portions of his letter in which really illustrated the depths of his delusions, the way in which he still looks to manipulate people, and truly his narcissism. Right. You know, I mean, to be so unaware to try to posit this theory of persecution and media frenzy and a conspiracy against him, to say hell hath no fury like a woman scorned in front of 150 women, an assistant AG lead prosecutor who is a woman, the detective lieutenant that worked this case, a woman, Judge Aquilina, a woman. Yeah. This is not, I mean, this is a sick individual who is woefully unaware.
Let me ask you about the judge for a moment, Rosemary Aquilina. She was clearly disgusted by Nassar. She turned out to be a fierce advocate for these victims, often praising, consoling them after their testimony. There was applause in the courtroom after she left the bench. I'm just curious, Katie Lee, I mean, do you think this gives ammunition for Nassar on any sort of appeal, that somehow this judge was not fair and impartial in this case, as much as many people would have supported that action?
Well, I don't think there would be any grounds to describe her as impartial, because he had already pled and been sentenced on the counts of child pornography. And these were victim impact statements. So her impartiality is not really the issue here, because she's not ruling, she's sentencing. And we're familiar with judges often weighing in at this point and speaking directly to people who are about to be sentenced, and often in very strong and moralistic terms. So I don't really think that that's different. But there is something that we are learning about the impact of trauma, the lifelong impact of trauma that results from the sexual abuse of girls and women, that all of these, the experiences of not being able to get away, of not being believed, of not being able to stop, not being able to get out of hurting range, the way in which trauma specialists teach us that the body keeps the score, that they need treatment.
For a long time.
Yes.
Kathy in New Orleans, Louisiana. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yes. Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm a school teacher, and the comment that I want to make is that is regarding the unwillingness of authority figures to protect children who complain. And I think it's endemic now in our culture. People in authority are unwilling to step forward, and for whatever reason, sometimes it's friendships. Sometimes I don't know what mm-hmm. other reasons there mm-hmm. might be, but I've witnessed it myself with less serious issues, not necessarily sexual abuse, but even things on the playground where one child hits another child. And I always tell my students, tell your teacher will, follow through, your teacher will help you and protect you. And it doesn't happen. A child comes forward, so, I was hit. Yeah. And even if there's physical evidence of it, and the follow through is pretty anemic.
And there are a lot of lessons here like that, I think, Kathy, for parents. And I'm really grateful that you called to say that. Here's Lori in Iowa City, Iowa. Lori, you're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
My comment is that I am a victim of being sexually abused by a physician when I was 15 in a small town here in southwest Iowa. That physician many years later, was convicted and pled to a lesser charge and of abusing another victim or patient. But he is now a registered sex offender. But I have had the opportunity to look at past complaints and police reports from this physician. And there were many victims who have tried to speak out over about a 40-year period. Mm-hmm. And somehow the community was kept that all under wraps. So I really identified a lot, I guess, with the gymnasts when they said they tried to speak out, but nobody really stood up for them.
And, Lori, it's a great point, and it leads me, Lee Gilmore, to ask you, there is a very clear picture. We have heard a very clear picture of what abuse looks like after hearing these gymnasts this week.
Well, indeed we have, and this is the same sort of revelation that the Me Too movement has exposed for us, which is that we not only lack a shared, robust, common language about sexual assault, sexual harassment, the harms, and the appropriate accountability that needs to attack it, but we also don't have a very clear picture of what men like Nassar are doing to all these gymnasts. So when the gymnasts say, I was competing and my vagina hurt after being molested by Larry Nassar, that's a pretty hard image to get out of your mind. And I think as extremely painful as it has been for the women to testify about this, that they are doing a tremendous service by putting this language out there and creating these images so that those are part of the public discourse. Mm-hmm.
Here's Allie Reisman giving her victim impact statement last week. She said this, Larry Nassar's hundreds of molestations could have stopped if only.
Your abuse started 30 years ago, but that's just the first reported incident we know of. If over these many years, just one adult listened and had the courage and character to act, this tragedy could have been avoided.
Katie Strang, if just one adult had listened. You said earlier that these testimonies, these victim testimony statements were like a phenomenon. It feels to me like a turning point, really, in how we look at sexual abuse. How do you see it? And Allie Reisman's statement there, what do you hear in that?
I sure hope so. And I think Allie did a tremendous job, in lending voice, to a very difficult issue, and one that, you know, there needs to be more awareness. There needs to be, you know, a sense of hypervigilance. Coming into the past week, I didn't know what grooming was. And now as a parent, I'm thankful because I'm going to be aware of that. And, you know, I hope if there's any takeaway from this, it is that, you know, when children tell us these things, we need to believe them. I'm not sure why so many people failed these women, but I hope that doesn't happen again. I think what many of these women did say and would say is that the reason they came forward, the singular reason they came forward, is to ensure it doesn't happen again. So I think punishment is one thing, and I'm glad for those women, you know, that they got a sliver of justice. But I think, you know, punishment isn't enough. There needs to be protection. You know, where we'll see these women really combine as a force in the future.
Lee Gilmore, you get the final word here.
Well, I've been really just so impressed by the what justice looks like right now, with each one of these women coming forward and in a sense saying me too, with the tremendous amount of courage that we've seen these athletes exhibit in competition, and the camaraderie that has clearly fueled them and inspired so many, inspiring them to come forward and share their testimony, and to have the judge in the case mark this as a space where they can leave their pain, has encouraged many of us to believe that this is an episode in which justice is being served.
Well, certainly courageous women and important lessons here. And we appreciate all the voices that joined this conversation this hour. Lee Gilmore, professor of women's and gender studies at Wellesley College and author of Tainted Witness, Why We Doubt What Women Say About Their Lives.
Thank you, Jane, for coming.
Thank you
so much.
It. Katie Strang, managing editor and senior writer at The Athletic. Great, a great perspective from you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Jane.
And thanks to you listeners, as always. Continue the conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.